203. It is, excuse me, it is 103, and it is Friday, February 6th, and I'm calling the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. And present with us right now is Representative Lynn, Representative Grunberg, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Representative Ledoux, Chair of the Committee. Housekeeping first, please silence your electronic devices. Thank you. We have before us today one bill previously heard, and that's HB 79, an act relating to controlled substances, marijuana, etc. Before that, however, we have a presentation of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and the equivalence of intellectual developmental disability by William Edwards. I'm anticipating a relatively short presentation, and then we will go to the marijuana bill. So, Mr. Edwards, could you please come forward, place yourself on the record, and proceed with your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Representatives, my name is William Edwards. I'm a deputy public defender in Los Angeles, California, and I'm one of the leading experts in the country in terms of dealing with criminal justice issues and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I'm also on the board of directors with the National Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, which is based in Washington, D.C., and we recently passed a board meeting to allow the first criminal justice task force on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder that we hope to get up and running in the next couple months. Alaska is the leading state in the country in dealing with issues with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. While you have the highest prevalence rates, you also have more diagnostic teams out there who are trying to get these children and adults diagnosed. However, one thing that I'm here to recommend is that you consider changing your definition of what constitutes a developmental disability to include the word fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And I will start by talking about your statute, which is the Alaskan Services Child Welfare Statute 4720.290. That statute, which talks about developmentally delayed children, mentions the word fetal alcohol syndrome. It does not apply to adults. So if we're trying to get someone who's been misdiagnosed, who's 28 years old, services from your state, this statute may not apply. Furthermore, the term fetal alcohol syndrome is not necessarily being used anymore because we're finding that only about 20% of all children and adults who are diagnosed actually have the facial features and who have an IQ below 70. If your IQ is not below 70, you will not qualify for services as if you were someone with a developmental disability, which means your IQ is below 70. The age of onset before that disability started was prior to the age of 18. My argument is that all children who are born with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder are born with a developmental disability. So I'm here for you. I'm urging you guys to consider what Minnesota has done. And they're the first state who have done this. They've taken their statute dealing with people with developmental disabilities, and I have a copy of this that I can leave with you. Minnesota Statute 25227, which they've changed the definition of what constitutes a developmental disability. And I'll read it. A related condition that is found to be closely related to a developmental disability, including but not limited to cerebral palsy, epilepsy, autism, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So with that definitional change, it doesn't mean that you're going to be guaranteed to get services, but it helps to open the door. So any child or any adult in Minnesota can use this statute once they have a proper medical diagnosis and start to get the services that they need. Both children and adults without supportive services cannot live in the community. They're going to end up in juvenile hall. They're going to end up in prison. But you can do the right thing by urging legislative change to include FASD in what constitutes a developmental disability. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Edwards? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, I appreciate what you're saying. It's a simple language change in a definition, but it's like throwing a stone into a pond. What I need to know is what are the legal ramifications of this definitional change, what statutes will it affect, what programs will it affect, how many people will be affected, and most importantly, what the cost to the state is. We're in a terrific budget crunch, and we're unlikely to have a capital budget of much. So we're going to have to know, at least I'm going to have to know, what this change is going to do, and who it's going to affect, and how much it's going to cost, and then we'll have to look at what we're going to have to cut to do this. Any comments?
I can refer to someone in the audience, since I'm not from here. I don't know all the services that are available in terms of people with developmental disabilities, but I would say that this is going to open the doors to allow people to get services that they're currently not getting, because if they don't qualify for SSI or they're not getting the services from the state because they're not allowed to get services unless they actually have a developmental disability, I can refer to someone who might be able to answer your questions about the cost of what it's going to cost to have someone get services. I can't answer that here.
I don't expect you to, but I want you to
through
know
the chair.
What you're thinking of. Through the chair. I don't expect you to, but you need to know the prism through which we're looking at your question.
Sure.
Thank you.
But what this will do for retribution
through the
issues,
chair.
You have to say through the chair.
Okay. May I?
Yes, definitely. It's just a formality so that everything gets on the record correctly.
Okay. Sir. What I was going to say is that if we get these services for people, it's going to keep them out of the prison systems, not only here but in every state. If we get these services in place, it's going to help the child who's in juvenile hall go back and live in the community and not end up more in the criminal justice system. That's what I think is going to happen by allowing them to get the services, because they're basically right now, unless you were to look at someone who's getting SSI here, they wouldn't qualify under your statute.
Understood. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you can give us just a very short history or some background on why FASD was not included originally in the definition of developmental disabilities.
I don't know why your legislative history did not include it in your bill that I mentioned. I'm not privy to that, but when the bill was passed, your child welfare statute only mentions the word fetal alcohol syndrome. And that's going to really close a lot of people out of the services, because there's only about 20% of all people nationally, not just Alaskan, who are going to actually have a low IQ below 70. And if they have an IQ of above 70, they're not going to get the services. So I don't know why Alaskan originally did that. But Minnesota looked at that, and that's why they made sure they used the word fetal alcohol spectrum disorder in their definition.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Edwards, is a person with an IQ just hovering around 70, is that person any worse off if the reason why that person's IQ is just hovering around 70 than anybody else whose IQ is simply hovering around 70?
Someone who has an IQ under the federal and definition, someone with an IQ below 70 or below who has low adaptive behavior deficits that you can show had that onset of disability prior to the age of 18 would qualify for the old term of what's called mental retardation, or also would qualify for the new term that we call intellectual disability. That's the new term to get away from the using the word mental retardation. We now say intellectual disability, or we say developmental disability. So someone who has an IQ of 70 or below may have low deficits and cognitive deficits, but also someone with an IQ of 98 could have very low adaptive behavior. That means they can't take public transportation, they can't live on their own, they can't have a bank account, they can't work without a job coach. These are the services that they need to be able to live in the community. So you're talking about two things. You're talking about someone who can be diagnosed as having mental retardation, and then versus someone who has FAS and FASD.
All right. Thank you. Question, Representative Lynn?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming here today. You're talking about determined to have an IQ around 70. How do they determine it? There are several different standardized tests for right. mental retardation. I think it's Stanford-Binet, and there's other ones.
Wechsler.
Wechsler is another one.
Correct.
And there may be others. Which one do they use? Because you use a different IQ test to determine, you're going to get a different number on the same person.
Right.
They're standardized. Do you see where I'm going with this? Mm-hmm. Different tests will measure differently.
Right. But if you're going to qualify, if someone's going to have mental retardation, you're going to get services in your state. You should qualify if you can show the IQ is 70 or below. Now, when you're looking at fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, you can have an IQ of 98 and still have severe cognitive deficits and problems in the executive area functioning of the brain and not be able to do the things that you and I can do. In other words, is that they need an external coach. Their inside of their brain is not put together like yours and I's. So they need someone on the outside to remind them constantly about doing things, and that's why they need special services.
Yes.
Follow up?
Yes. Thank you, but I was asking, what test is there standardized test that they use? Do they use one test, say Stanford-Binet in Alaska, maybe Wechsler in South Dakota, or some other test someplace else?
You're not
is there standardized? Because you're going to get different numbers on the same person.
But you're not necessarily looking at an IQ score for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. That's only part of a diagnosis. You need to look at the medical diagnosis. You look at neuropsychological testing that's completed. Then you can look at an IQ.
Yes, but when you do look at the
through
IQ...
Through the chair.
Through the chair. When you do look at fetal alcohol, do look at an IQ test. Which one do you use after you do these other things?
IQ is very misleading for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. You cannot say because he has an IQ of 70 or 75, he's going to have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much for coming here today. I appreciated your presentation. I'm wondering whether you can send us your presentation in writing. You can send it to my office, and perhaps if you're able to answer Representative Grunberg's questions.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. So, as I was saying, the bill before us today is HB 79, the Marijuana Crime Bill. Now, I want to make it really clear that this bill is still a work in progress. If this were a bill in the normal course of events without a timeline approaching, we probably wouldn't even be here today. But since on February 24th, according to the People's Initiative, marijuana becomes legal for personal consumption, we would like to have a bill to make things clear to the citizens, to make things clear to the law enforcement community, to make things clear to the legal community. So we're going to continue to take public testimony even before the bill is in the form that I would have liked to have seen it in. But it is my intent that when we finally pass this bill through committee, that this bill is going to meet the intent of the people who voted for ballot measure number 2. It is my intent, and I believe it is the intent, and I hope it is the intent of my committee members, that we want to conform, we want to heed the will of the people here. And this bill, in its present form, I'm aware and we are aware that it doesn't quite get there. I think we're about 70% there, but it still needs to go back to the drawing boards. But we're still going to continue to discuss it, to take public testimony, and to try to get it into a better bill prior to February 24th. So, with that in mind, I would like to continue the presentation of HB 79, and there is a Judiciary Committee CS at the moment. So could I have a motion to adopt the draft CS 29LS0409/E for discussion purposes?
Madam Chair, I move the proposed CS
Judiciary Version LS0409 ECHO for consideration.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
For
Representative Grunberg.
I will object for discussion only, and I have a preliminary question. Does this sectional analysis relate to version E, or is it a previous version?
No, the sectional analysis should be relating to this current CS. And I see that Thomas Brown, my judiciary aide, is shaking his head yes. So he will explain this in his presentation. Mr. Brown, would you identify yourself for the record and walk us through this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Thomas Brown, staff to Representative Ledoux. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, House Bill 79 revises some of Alaska's criminal statutes to ensure that the will of the electorate is respected by cleaning up the now contradictory laws regarding marijuana. The purpose of this bill is to provide our law enforcement community with clear instructions so that innocent people are not punished for following the law. The first version of this bill was deeply unpopular, and I'd like to emphasize, as the chair has already remarked, that the CS before you, version E, is still a work in progress. The central complaint against the original draft was that it merely provided a defense for conduct involving marijuana instead of making the conduct itself lawful. We believe that this draft goes a long ways towards establishing the legality of marijuana and associated activities. Again, this bill is not a final, but merely a step forward, and we view this hearing as an opportunity for the public and the affected departments to make their opinions heard and to actively solicit their advice. I would like to present a brief summary of the CS before you. I'm prepared to answer some of your questions, and we do have experts available here and online to answer the more technical questions the committee may have. First, it should be noted that a good portion of the sections in the CS of House Bill 79 are conforming amendments, and that many of the other sections are the results of specific choices we made and asked the drafters to consider. Since the bill removes marijuana from the list of controlled substances, a large number of statutes have to be amended to re-include marijuana, as those statutes now no longer apply to marijuana. Basically, since the voters seem to want marijuana regulated like alcohol, it was felt that they still wanted some uses of marijuana to be illegal. So some new crimes had to be created to reflect that new reality. It is a priority for the bill to conform as much as possible to the initiative and to marijuana's new legal status. We still have a little way to go on that. So with your patience, I'd like to present a rough sectional analysis of the CS for House Bill 79. Sections 1 and 2 re-include marijuana as a substance which a person may not be under the influence of and operate an aircraft or use ski trails or equipment. Section 3 amends the licensing requirement for nurse practitioners to re-include marijuana abuse as a condition for denial, suspension, or revocation of license.
Are you taking questions in the middle?
Yes. Through the chair.
Yes, of course. Madam Chair. When I looked at that particular subsection, it used the term abuse, substance abuse. And this is, as I recall, very clear. What is it? What section is this, Tom?
Section 3, page 2.
Yeah.
Beginning on line 14.
Line 21, habitually abuses these substances. And this doesn't just relate to marijuana, but is there a definition of abuse?
Is there a definition of abuse?
Yeah.
Not in this bill, but there is in other statutes, and there.
I'm just wondering if that's through the chair.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if that is defined in 0868.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it is not defined in 0868 in the part that's here in this bill.
We
have someone from the Department of Health and Social Services online or in the audience who may be able to answer that question, though.
Proceed.
Section 4 is similar to the previous section as it removes Schedule 6A controlled substances, marijuana, from the list of agents an optometrist cannot prescribe. Section 5 prohibits pawnbrokers from knowingly entering into a transaction with someone under the influence of marijuana. Section 6 defines illegal activity involving marijuana as one of many reasons for abatement of certain places. Section 7 re-includes operating a vehicle under the influence of marijuana as a serious criminal offense. It should be noted this is not under the statute titles for DUI laws. This is a separate section altogether, and we will need to revisit that section in order to make sure that driving under the influence of marijuana is in fact part of the regular DUI statutes for the state of Alaska. Section 8 reestablishes the liability of someone driving under the influence of marijuana for personal injury or wrongful death. Sections 9 and 10 remove Schedule 6A controlled substances, marijuana, from the statutes defining murder in the second degree and the murder of an unborn child. Sections 11 and 12 reincorporate marijuana into the statutes defining weapons misconduct in the third and fourth degrees. Sections 13 and 14 remove marijuana from crimes of misconduct with a controlled substance in the third and fourth degrees. Sections 15 through 20 are merely conforming amendments. Section 21 specifies marijuana in the general provisions definition of intoxication. Sections 22 and 23 allow for the prohibition of marijuana use as a condition for pretrial release. Section 24, also a conforming amendment, is just clarifying definitions to match the language of the initiative. Section 25 establishes that law enforcement agency laboratory reports are to be used as evidence of the weight of marijuana in commission of a crime. Section 26 and 27 allow for the prohibition of marijuana as an authorized sentence or for a term of probation. Section 28 describes the punishment allowable for possessing marijuana in violation of statute. It should be noted that there was a typo there in the one before you. It is not on the controlled substance prescription database. It's in a separate statute altogether. I have to take the blame for that one. Typo. Very sorry. Sections 29 and 31 clarifies that marijuana can be an aggravating or mitigating factor in the sentencing of certain crimes. Section 32, another conforming amendment to clarify definitions matching the initiative language. Sections 33 and 34 clarifies that synthetic drugs which will resemble marijuana are still illegal. Previously, they were illegal only because they were facsimiles of a controlled substance. As marijuana is no longer a controlled substance, if we want these synthetic drugs to remain illegal, we have to make them illegal in and of themselves and not because they resemble marijuana, which is now legal. Sections 35 and 37 eliminate the requirement to defer to federal substance scheduling standards in the case of marijuana. Section 38 provides an affirmative defense for registered caregivers charged with offenses related to marijuana. 39, another conforming amendment, clarifying definitions. Sections 40 through 43 establish that a person 21 years of age or older may own, operate, be an agent of, or be employed by any of the various commercial aspects of marijuana business, a retail store, cultivation facility, product manufacturing facility, or a testing facility. And also that they may perform all the duties and activities related to such work without that being a basis for a seizure or a forfeiture. Section 4 is merely technical changes. Section 45 describes the crime of misconduct involving marijuana in the first degree, which makes it a Class A misdemeanor. Also, the describes the crime of misconduct in the second degree, classifies a Class B misdemeanor. Crime of misconduct involving marijuana in the third and fourth degrees, classifies them as violations. Also allows for bail forfeiture for marijuana-related violations, so you don't have to go to court to pay your dues. You can do it as you pay a traffic ticket. It describes offenses defined by amounts, provides for a formative defense for medical marijuana-related offenses, and provides related definitions. Section 46 defines marijuana concentrates. 47 allows for protective orders to require the respondent to participate in marijuana abuse treatment programs. 48 and 49 prohibit the Violent Crimes Compensation Board from denying a victim based on their use of marijuana or from being injured in a vehicle operated by someone under the influence of marijuana. Section 50, for insurance purposes, it defines drug abuse to include marijuana dependency. 51, for labor practices, defines drug testing to include marijuana as defined in the initiative. Previously, it said controlled substances, no longer controlled substance, have to specify marijuana. 52 allows for parental visitation rights to be conditioned on the abstention of marijuana use. 53-55 prohibit driving in a motor vehicle with an open marijuana container that is not in the trunk of the vehicle. It defines the term open container, but also allows for the transport of an open marijuana container on a motor-driven cycle or behind the last upright seat in a trunkless vehicle. My understanding is that this matches the language that we currently use for transporting alcohol in a vehicle. 56 and 57 allow for the prohibition of marijuana use or the entering of an establishment where marijuana is sold as a condition of parole. 58 is a conforming amendment, merely defining what a controlled substance is. 59 and 60 prevent prisoners from possessing material related to the manufacture of marijuana and allows for the consideration of marijuana use as a determinant for terms of imprisonment. Sections 61 through 65 define illegal activity involving marijuana and prohibits tenants from engaging in such while renting property. Also some technical changes and conforming amendments. Section 66 removes marijuana as a controlled substance altogether. Section 67 defines marijuana as an intoxicant. Section 68 criminalizes minor access to marijuana establishments. 69 requires infant care providers to report marijuana exposure of an infant. Section 70 through 74 requires persons incapacitated by marijuana in a public place to be taken into protective custody and brought to a treatment or health facility. It requires such persons to be released once no longer incapacitated and their next of kin to be notified upon their admission to the facility. It also prevents action for damages taken upon the decision to deliver such a person to a facility. 75 allows for the commitment of a person incapacitated by marijuana to a public health facility for emergency treatment. 76 and 77 allow for certain authorized persons to petition for a 30-day involuntary commitment to a public treatment facility of someone incapacitated by marijuana and also allows for the extension of that involuntary commitment to 180 days. 78 defines drug abuser to include marijuana dependency. 79 excludes marijuana from the definition of drug. 80 defines the incapacitation by marijuana. 81 defines an intoxicated person to include impairment by marijuana. 82, another conforming amendment defining marijuana to match that of the initiative language. 83 and 84 allow for the prohibition of marijuana use as a condition of participation in substance abuse programs and sets testing requirements of marijuana by these programs. 85 is more conforming amendments of the definitions of intoxicated persons and marijuana as described in the initiative language. And 86 repeals multiple statutes no longer necessary. 87 is clarifies the applicability of certain sections, and 88 is the effective date. Thank you again for your patience on that. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that I can answer and defer to experts where I can't.
To begin with, I just want to clarify something. Like, take, for example, Section 77, which refers to commitment proceedings.
Through the chair, could you repeat that, please?
Refer, for example, to Section 77, referring to involuntary commitment proceedings. So I want to clarify. It adds marijuana to the statute, but previously, because marijuana was considered a controlled substance, marijuana was already included previously. So things such as this are more or less conforming amendments, as opposed to a situation where you could not be involuntarily committed as a result of marijuana use.
Madam Chair, that is correct. We added that the word marijuana was specifically added because it is no longer a drug, it is no longer a controlled substance, and if we want to be able to continue treating people who have issues with this substance, controlled or not, we needed to be very specific.
Okay. I appreciate that clarification, because going through that, it sounded as if there were all sorts of things in which now marijuana was going to subject you to involuntary commitment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in which it hadn't been able to happen before. And that's not the case, correct?
Correct.
All right. Thank you. So does anybody have any questions for Mr. Brown right now? Representative Clayman.
A fairly broad question. Is the basic intent, because we haven't had a chance to go through in great detail because these have come out very recently, is the basic intent to enact the language the voters approved in the initiative and then basically supplement the rest of the statutes to make it the rest of the statutes consistent with what the voters approved?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, that's correct. Removing marijuana as a controlled substance basically leaves everything open, and if we wanted to regulate it like alcohol, well, you can't drink and drive, so therefore you can't toke and drive either. So, and we had to make that specific in the statute.
Thank you.
I look forward to analyzing this in more detail.
I think we all do. Are there any other questions for Mr. Brown right now before we go to public testimony? All right. Well, thank you very much. And you will be staying around just in case we've got some questions for you. All right. I would now like to open public testimony. The first person that I'd like to hear from is Rachel Young of the Marijuana Policy Project, and I'd like to have you share your thoughts with us. And I'm pronouncing that correctly, Ms. Young?
Chairman Ledoux, that's correct. It's Rochelle Young.
Thank you. All right. If you could identify yourself for the record, tell us what group you are affiliated with, and tell us where you're testifying from.
Thank you, Chairman Ledoux. My name is Rochelle Young. For the record, that is spelled R-A-C-H-E-L-L-E. Last name Young, Y-E-U-N-G. And I'm a legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project. MPP is a national nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C., and our mission is to assist and support local activists throughout the United States to reform marijuana policy laws in their own states. Shall I begin my testimony?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. As I mentioned, MPP works with local activists to reform marijuana policy in their own states. As such, MPP has been working with local activists in Alaska for many years, including by serving as legal and policy counsel for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol this past November in support of ballot measure 2. Dr. Tim Hinterberger, chairman of the campaign, was unable to attend today's committee hearing, and he does send his apologies due to prior commitments as a medical school professor, which is his full-time occupation. Dr. Hinterberger personally requested that I speak on his behalf today and discuss with you the concerns of the campaign. I believe you may have already received a memo outlining Dr. Hinterberger's position, which I'd like to go over with you now, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. So with the understanding that this is a working bill and I am providing these comments not as criticism, but simply as guidance on how to continue improving the bill. Now, the draft that we are discussing today is already a substantially improved approach compared to the first version that we have seen. Rather than merely creating a defense against state criminal charges, which is what the first draft of HB 79 did, this revision would exempt most of the conduct that is permitted by Measure 2 from Alaska criminal statutes. The campaign deeply appreciates this committee for taking seriously its previous feedback on the matter. While this draft is far better overall, it still includes several provisions that that the campaign views as not conforming to the will of the voters. Most notably, this redraft of HB 79 would still repeal Measure 2's comprehensive legal protections for adults and replaces them with more limited protections. Now, as you know, Measure 2 makes it lawful under Alaska state law and the laws of all of its political subdivisions for adults 21 and older to possess, give away to other adults, and cultivate marijuana for their personal use. It also explicitly provides that such conduct may not be a basis for seizure and asset forfeiture. HB 79, Section 86, all the way at the bottom of the bill, would repeal these comprehensive legal protections that were passed by the voters in Alaska. While the redraft removes criminal penalties for most of the conduct allowed by Measure 2, which we appreciate,
Madam Chair,
so is not nearly as comprehensive.
Yes, Representative Klayman.
Do we have the speaker's comments in writing in our packet, or have we not received anything in writing from you?
I'm going to call in at ease right now because I'm actually looking right through my packet, and I'm seeing the first statements from Dr. Hinterberger, but I'm not seeing in my packet, I'm not seeing his subsequent letter. So if we could have him at ease. All right. Have the Dr. Hinterberger's letter in front of us. Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Ledoux. I apologize that you did not have those earlier. So what I have reviewed so far is just section one of that memo that was submitted yesterday. And so essentially, Measure 2 included more protections for adults' personal use than what HB 79 would. Specifically, Measure 2 also protected adults using marijuana not just from state criminal penalties, but also penalties under local ordinances and protection from seizure and asset forfeiture. So the campaign believes it is crucial that these activities be explicitly lawful under state law and that the language from Measure 2 remain on the books. Another example of how HB 79 continues to criminalize certain behaviors by adults that Measure 2 made lawful can be found under Section 2 of this memo, the first bullet point, specifically that adults are permitted under Measure 2 to possess all of the marijuana produced from their own plants on the premises in which those plants were personally cultivated. So while there's a general protection for up to an ounce for adults 21 and up, they may possess more than that if they grow it themselves and without removing it from that premises. One additional detail, and this can be found in Section 45 of HB 79, but that bill also criminalizes mere possession or display of marijuana by adults in public view. Now, Measure 2 does continue to criminalize the use of marijuana in public, but that's a distinct and more narrow exception than what HB 79 does. So it's use versus use and display, and the other distinction is public versus in public view. In public view is obviously a much broader area than in public. And then the last point I would like to make before turning this over, actually I would like to make two more points before turning this over for questions, is under Section 3, we address extraction from marijuana concentrates by adults. This is addressed in HB 79, Section 45. We are pleased to see that an exception has been made for registered businesses to be allowed to do these marijuana concentration extracts in their facilities under secure and safe conditions, and we do want to make clear that we would not object to imposing a ban on the home production of extracts using methods that can be dangerous when conducted at a residence, which HB 79 does. So we'd like to thank you for making that change. And we'd like to add to that provision, however, that an exception should also be made for water-based extractions, since water-based extractions don't pose the same risk of danger as other types of home extractions might. The final point I'd like to make is under Section 4 of the memo, where we discuss individuals under 21 on the premises of a marijuana business. We would like to ensure that an exception is made for individuals under 21 who are not employed by the marijuana business and do not work directly with marijuana, but who may have a legitimate work reason to be at the establishment, such as being an EMT, regulatory staff, maintenance personnel, even perhaps an elected official or law enforcement officer themselves. In fact, there is similar language found under Title IV for minors on the premises of an alcohol establishment, and we'd suggest simply mirroring that language to be applied to marijuana establishments as well. That's the end of my prepared testimony, Madam Chairman. I'd be happy to take any questions from the committee.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Young? Well, hearing no questions, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The next person that I will be calling is Tracy Wallenberg. Tracy, can you identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated and tell us from where you're testifying?
Yes, thank you. My name is Tracy Wallenberg, and I'm the Deputy Public Defender for the Appellate Division at the Alaska Public Defender Agency. And I'm testifying today from my office in Anchorage.
You can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee for this opportunity to testify before you again today. I previously testified on Senate Bill 30, and this version, which removes the defense to prosecution for certain marijuana-related conduct, is more consistent with the intent of the voters who enacted ballot measure 2. And so I echo that sentiment previously stated by the Marijuana Policy Project. I also echo, however, that this version of the bill still includes provisions that are inconsistent with ballot measure 2 and the will of the voters. And of particular concern, and what I really wanted to focus my testimony on today, is Section 45, which creates new marijuana offenses. Misconduct involving marijuana in the first, second, third, and fourth degree. While this is generally a much better approach than the one in the last bill, which as previously discussed, set it up as a defense to prosecution for what should be lawful conduct, the section still substantially rewrites the legal protections for marijuana-related conduct that the voters enacted, specifically in AS 1738-020 of the initiative. In essence, it continues to criminalize some aspects of conduct that the voters elected to legalize. And I'll just start, I think, because it might be cleaner to do so, with misconduct involving marijuana in the first degree, which is proposed Section 1738-200. This section would criminalize knowingly possessing more than 1 ounce of marijuana, or knowingly manufacturing or delivering or possessing with the intent to manufacture or deliver more than 1 ounce of marijuana. This will therefore lower to 1 ounce, or more than 1 ounce, the amount of marijuana that adults can lawfully possess. That is true under certain circumstances, that 1 ounce is the limit. For example, if an individual is purchasing marijuana from one of the marijuana-licensed facilities, that the limit for doing so would be 1 ounce. But marijuana is defined under the initiative to include plants. So this provision would effectively eliminate other portions of 1738-020, specifically B and C, which allow for the cultivating of a certain number of plants or the transfer of a certain number of plants to another person. the weight of which is almost certain to be over 1 ounce. So, for example, the initiative allows, makes legal the possession, growing, processing, or transporting of no more than 6 marijuana plants, up to 3 of which can be mature flowering plants. And as a marijuana, Ms. Young from the Marijuana Policy Project pointed out, the possession of all the marijuana produced from those plants, if possessed on the premises where those plants were grown. So this essentially, that provision of the initiative essentially allows a person to grow plants and keep all the marijuana from those plants, which will inevitably be more than 1 ounce. And so the provision 1738-200 in the proposed bill, which prohibits possessing more than 1 ounce, conflicts with that portion of the initiative. Similarly, the initiative allows for the transfer of 1 ounce or less, plus up to 6 immature marijuana plants to someone 21 or over without remuneration. By definition, that portion of the initiative will be more than 1 ounce, since it allows a person to transfer 1 ounce plus 6 immature plants. And so again, 1738-200, which is limited to possessing or manufacturing or delivering more than 1 ounce without engrafting those provisions from the initiative will, by definition, I think, conflict with the intent of the voters. So the suggestion there is to consider whether grafting onto the proposed misconduct statutes the provisions from the initiative that govern essentially growing and transferring marijuana and the limits that were set by the voters. Moving on to 1738-210, which is misconduct involving marijuana in the second degree, I think actually there was, it appears to be an attempt in that statute to import the portion of the initiative that allows for the transfer of up to 1 ounce of marijuana plus 6 immature marijuana plants to another person. So you'll see that in 1738-210A2A. I think that's, again, an attempt to import the portion from the initiative that allows for that, but it conflicts with what I previously discussed, 1738-200, marijuana in the first, misconduct involving marijuana in the first degree, which doesn't allow for the delivery of over 1 ounce. So those two provisions, as currently drafted, appear to be inconsistent. Though the one I just read in 1738-210 is more, seems to comport more with the intent of the initiative. Moving on to 1738-220, again, I think this is something that Ms. Young talked about. The initiative is intended to set certain restrictions on personal cultivation of marijuana in the home, and this section is broader than that in the initiative by also restricting possession and displaying marijuana plants in certain circumstances. And the reason this is problematic is because it would essentially allow, prohibit possessing marijuana in a place subject to public view, even though, of course, the initiative allows people to possess marijuana in or out of the home up to certain amounts and to transport certain marijuana up to a certain amount either in or out of the home. So I think this section, to comport with the initiative, needs to be limited to manufacturing, with the idea being that if somebody's growing plants, it should conform to the restrictions set out in the initiative to shield those plants from public view. Moving on to 1738-230, a similar comment there. The initiative prohibits people 21 years of age or older from using any amount of marijuana in public in a public place, and again, it doesn't prohibit transporting certain amounts of marijuana in public. And so the suggestion there to comport with the initiative is to remove the word displays. With regards to one overarching provision from the initiative that appears to have been removed, in 1738-020 of the initiative, it indicates that the marijuana-related conduct that's made lawful shall not be a criminal or civil offense under Alaska law or be a basis for seizure or forfeiture of assets under Alaska law. That language seems to have been removed in the new bill with regards to the personal conduct offenses. It's still maintained to a certain extent in sections 40 to 43, which deal with offenses by commercial marijuana facilities. The language there makes clear that the conduct which is legalized shall not serve as a basis for seizure or forfeiture of assets under Alaska law. That language is not repeated in the personal conduct, personal use misconduct statutes, and the concern there is that removing the language in one area but leaving it in another area may cause courts or parties to read in some significance, or in particular, I should say, law enforcement to read in some significance to the fact that the language about seizure has been removed from the personal use offenses, and that would not be consistent with voter intent. And I just echo one more thing that the policy project said, which is I think the initiative was intended that the conduct that's made lawful not constitute an offense under state or local law. And it seems that, although it does not immediately obvious, that the change in language from shall not be an offense to are not offenses would have really much significance. There is a chance that subtle change in language would leave conduct that's otherwise intended to be lawful open to potentially being made unlawful by local municipalities. And so you might consider keeping the shall not be an offense language intact as it was in the initiative. I'd like to make one more comment on Section 68. Section 68 removed from the juvenile jurisdiction from the realm of juvenile jurisdiction certain conduct by people under, by minors, in particular using basically a false ID and misrepresenting age with regards to registered marijuana premises. Removing it from the juvenile jurisdiction statute would essentially mean that that's pursued in adult court and open to public view and no longer confidential. And prosecuting juveniles for this conduct without making the records confidential could have unintended consequences for minors' prospects, job prospects or otherwise. You might consider whether making this conduct confidential is more in keeping with the goal of ensuring there's some consequence for minors, but not a consequence beyond, more severe than that which is intended. With that, I believe that completes my testimony, and I'd be happy to take questions from the committee.
Well, thank you very much. Do I have any questions from anybody on the committee? All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your willingness to testify. I only have one more person offline and are outside of Juneau, and that is Bruce Schulte. And Bruce, would you identify yourself for the record and tell us where you're testifying and with whom you're affiliated?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm a spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation.
You can proceed.
Okay, I'm not sure if my notes were there in time to be copied for the committee. If they're not, that's my fault. I sent them in late this morning.
We have them, Bruce.
Okay, terrific. I won't read every line, so I'll just try and paraphrase what I've written there. First of all, I would just like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to comment on this bill and to applaud the committee and staff for the tremendous progress that has been made. I think you're more than 70% of the way along. I think this is shaping up very nicely. We applaud you, and I appreciate the effort. A couple of general comments. Most of my comments have to do with sections 45 and 86 of the bill. And I've cited them by the statute number and paragraph where appropriate. The first two refer to definitions of marijuana and their compounds, and marijuana and its related compounds, and it refers to them by weight as being 1 ounce. And I was just suggesting a slight rewording of that based on the fact that certain edibles, you know, baked goods or liquid, for example, may well be over 1 ounce, but may contain a very, very small fraction of marijuana. So I was just suggesting a couple of grammatical changes there in my comments 1 and 2. Number 3, this is one that's come up a lot. I will say that we don't support, condone, or recommend the use of butane to extract hash oil. It's a silly thing to do, and it's obviously dangerous, so I think it's totally appropriate that we address it in some fashion. We were suggesting a slight change in the terminology here, though, and I believe Rochelle Young kind of alluded to this also, that there are other extraction methods that might be done in the home that are perfectly safe, using, for example, ice water or dry ice. So I was suggesting that the terminology be changed a little bit to specifically refer to volatile or explosive gases, since those are really the problematic ones that, you know, used in the home by untrained personnel in the wrong way can in fact be dangerous. So that was just a suggested term to sort of narrow that down to what we're really trying to the problem we're really trying to get to. In my comment number 5, this was really a grammatical thing, so I won't labor that. That was number 4. Number 5, I believe the other two speakers have already spoken to this, but I would like to just add our voice. Section 1738.020 and 030, 020 speaks to personal use of marijuana and cultivation, and we do feel that was really at the heart of the initiative for a lot of voters and contains some specific language that we would like to see preserved. So with that in mind, we would respectfully recommend that the sections 020 and 030 be retained as they were originally written in the initiative. In my comment number 6, this has come up a lot at the local level, the definition of public place versus private. And I will just say we don't condone or encourage anybody consuming marijuana, you know, out on the street, you know, in front of the hangar on the wharf, in the park strip in Anchorage, or any other obviously public place. I mean, we agree with that. But there are some subtle differences or subtle variations on the definition of public versus private space that we think could be clarified. For example, an event, just for an example, I would use the Beer and Barley Wine Festival that happens in Anchorage periodically, and I think Haynes has something similar in the summers. We would like to see the terminology defined sufficiently so that special events like that, operating under a permit or license at state or local level, and with the specific provision that marijuana products could be consumed on site, that those events be allowed to take place, because there could be, you know, conventions of a sort that obviously would need to be done, you know, with respect to the public, but could involve, you know, consumption in some limited capacity, and that may not necessarily be smoking either. There's other forms of vaporizers and so forth that might be considered, but that definition of public versus private space has come up at the local level, and I know a number of local legislators local officials have asked that the state take it up and provide some sort of overarching definition. And let's see, finally, this is just sort of a note. I recognize that some of the sections of the voter initiative 1738 needed to be repealed where they were replaced by corresponding legal language. I was just sort of acknowledging that. I think that's all my prepared comments, and I'll take any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Well, I don't see anybody else outside of Juno. So is there anybody in this audience who would like to testify. I know we have Hillary Martin and Dennis Casanovas online, but they, it looks like they're just for questions. Is there anybody else here who would like to testify? Right. Well, I'm not going to close public testimony now because I know that there's going to be another CS. So at ease for a minute. We are back on record. Representative Grunberg?
I remove my objection.
Thank you. Okay, so we now have the CS before us. As I say, I'm sure that down the line there will be another CS. But do we have any discussion right now? All right, well, hearing no discussion right now and seeing no one outside of Juneau and nobody in this building who wants to testify, it is 5 minutes after 2, and so we are adjourned.